Hey everyone, this is Master Zotos, and you're listening to Guildcast.
Welcome back to this 54th episode of Guildcast for November 11th, 2006. I'm your host, Sean. This week, we're going to delve into the world of the heroes, which is a feature of the game that was introduced with Chapter 3, Nightfall. I'll talk more about what they are, how many there are, and how to make the most of your heroes. Also, in the all-new and improved PvP segment, I'll go over hero battles and just how fun they can be. First, though, I had some people who asked to be mentioned this week, including Shao Black, Eladra Caliph, and Hel Dantes. As for game news, on Tuesday, November 7th, they had an update, where they added two new item inscriptions, Show Me the Money and Measure for Measure, continuing their trend to make pop culture references into skills. They removed collision between members of the same team, including minions and pets. This change applies only to role-playing missions and areas. They fixed a bug that sometimes kept players from getting credit for kills made by their minions and pets. They modified the quest Capturing the Signet of Capture so that it is now available only to players created in Alona. They fixed a bug that prevented some hero skill templates from being applied to players. They fixed a bug that made it impossible for some players to capture the Avatar of Lissa skill. They fixed a bug that allowed the skills Rampage as one and Strike as one to activate without a living pet. They made the Crippling Slash skill available for capture. They fixed a bug that caused the camera to recenter itself during spellcasting, which was quite annoying. They fixed a bug in the Jokanor Diggings mission. And finally, they fixed bugs and made improvements to the following quests: Sunspears and Krita, Missing Shipment, To Die For, Scholarly Affairs, and Tending an Offer. I've had a few emails this week asking me why the comments have been disabled on the Guildcast.com main page for each set of show notes. I actually did this a few months back also, but the same problems have sprung up again, so I've removed the ability to add comments once again. Basically, the reason for this was spammers. Nothing's broken or anything like that, it's just plain old spammers. I was getting several of these spam comments every day, and I had to go through and remove them, and it just wasn't really worth it to me. So if you have something to say about a topic on a certain episode, though, please feel free to register for our Guildcast forums. It's better moderated, and it just works better overall than just simply posting a comment in the show notes. But I do understand that a lot of times people don't want to register for forums and go through that whole process, and they'd rather just throw a comment out there on the show notes. And I understand that, but the spam was just getting too bad. I just had to disable it again. Also, it should be noted that in the forums themselves, I'm receiving a lot of registrations from spammers, but since they all use the exact same method to register with their invalid email addresses that bounce back to me, I'm usually alerted right away, and I delete their accounts, usually within an hour or less of their registration. This also happens several times a week, like with the show note comments. So I wanted to bring this up because if I've mistakenly deleted your username on the forums, just send me an email and let me know what your name was, and I'll be happy to re-register you if it was just a mistake on my part. Also, voicemails on Skype. I've had some problems with Skype lately where for some reason it'll crash after someone leaves a voicemail. So what will happen is I'll get the first one, but if someone tries to call after that and leave a voicemail, and I'm not home yet to reset Skype, then you won't get the voicemail message, and it'll just keep ringing and ringing and ringing. I know a lot of you have tried that, because I'll get a lot of missed calls during the day. But I just want to let you know, I'm in the process of figuring this out, so just bear with me there, and I should have that fixed. But if you try to call and leave a voicemail and it just keeps ringing, try again at a later time because I might just have to reset it. I also wanted to mention something about a new tournament that we in the Guildcast Listeners United Guild will be holding very soon. It'll be an American football-style tournament, complete with end zones and turnover of downs and extra points and all that stuff. What I'll do is I'll put a link to a new page that I created with all the info you'll need, like the official rules and all that. I'll put a link to that in the show notes for today. And on that page, there will also be a link to the sign-up sheet where you can actually sign up to take part in this tournament. But the sign-up sheet is in the Guildcast forums themselves, so you will have to register for the forums if you want to sign up. And just take note that there's no set day or time for this to begin, and some finer details are still being worked out, but we wanted to see what kind of interest there would be first. Coogan in the forums, who's also one of my guild's officers, has done most of the work on getting this set up after getting the idea from Lima Bean of Doom, who's also in my guild. But Coogan has set up a separate guild now just for this tournament, so he's not messing around. I would certainly expect to hear more about this in the future. So, while doing some research for Heroes, I noticed that most sources just referred back to the page on the official GuildWars.com website and their description of the heroes that they had posted. So, I'm going to mainly just read from that page, adding in some things here and there relating to my own personal experiences with heroes. As you advance through the game's storyline, you'll have opportunities to recruit adventurers controlled by other players and henchmen computer-controlled allies. These alliances are temporary, usually just long enough for you to finish a few quests or missions, but the story also includes opportunities now to recruit long-term allies, heroic non-player characters who play an ongoing role in the story. Completing specific quests allows you to recruit these unique heroic NPCs, commonly known as heroes. Heroes typically join your party as part of a quest. Sometimes the rewards for a quest include a chance to ally with that hero. The NPC is recruited for your current character only. Some heroes are exclusive. Completing the quest to gain one makes you ineligible for the quest required to gain another. Your character can be allied with multiple heroes. You can add a hero to your party whenever you're in a town or outpost. When you do, the hero's level does not depend on the location you use to add that NPC, like with henchmen. A hero in your party gains experience and levels, just as a character does. A hero can never have a higher level than the character working with that hero. If a hero is lower level than the player who controls it, the hero gains experience points from kills at a vastly accelerated rate. Heroes in your party receive experience points for quests and missions when you complete them also. Once you leave town, your hero's actions are guided by the actions of the character who controls it. When multiple players work together in a group, each player's character controls the heroes working with that character. Like henchmen, heroes take their share of the gold and loot when defeating enemies. Players can improve a hero's weapon, shield, and focus item as that NPC gains levels. The hero's armor improves automatically each time that hero levels up, and there are also opportunities to give your heroes elite armor, comparable to 15k armor for your player, in certain challenge missions later on in the game. This new armor gained this way is only changed in appearance, though, not stats. Also note that you cannot dye your hero's armor. It's important to note that heroes have a few elements that cannot change also, such as their name or their primary profession. Nightfall includes commands you can use for controlling and directing your heroes. Once you leave town with a hero in your party, you can direct where that hero travels using your compass. Under your compass, you'll see a set of four flags. With the first flag, you can set a common destination for all of your heroes and henchmen. To set a destination for them, simply double-click once on the first flag, and then click on the mini-map in the center of your compass. All of your heroes and henchmen will then walk to that destination. Double-clicking the same button can remove the destination flag from your compass. When you remove a destination flag for a hero or henchman, that NPC no longer walks to that location. Instead, the NPC returns to your location. When you look at your party panel, you'll see a list of heroes in your party. You can open or close the party panel by pressing P. Each hero has a number in front of his or her name. Each number corresponds to one of three numbered flags below your compass. You can set a destination for a hero by double-clicking on the flag button with that hero's number, and then clicking the compass minimap. If you like, you can set a destination flag by clicking on the terrain in front of your character instead of using the compass. When you do, a corresponding destination flag also appears on your compass. Remember though, after the battle is over, you'll want to remove that flag that you placed. Otherwise, you may run off unintentionally leaving your heroes back at the flag. I've done this several times myself. Each hero can have one of three combat modes. Each one corresponds to a different icon in their skill bar. There's aggressive, which makes the hero attack a called target or a target in combat with the party. If necessary, the hero will charge forward away from the rest of the party to attack. And then there's defensive. The hero stands guard over the flagged area if you have placed a destination flag, or toward the back lines of the party if you have not. The hero will attack called targets and any target in combat with the party, but only if doing so does not force that hero to leave the guarded area. And then finally we have passive, which makes the hero never attack and attempts to avoid enemies when attacked. Your hero's AI can also be told to disable certain skills. This prevents the AI from using that skill unless you specifically tell it to. To do this, hold down Shift and click the skill icon. A red circle with a slash through it will appear over the skill. Shift-click again to re-enable the skill. Heroes will also use anything you give them, but the AI is set up so that they take certain things into consideration. For example, if you give your monk hero the skill Duenna's Kiss, they will cast that only when you have a condition on you, increasing the effectiveness of that spell. They also use skills in a priority of left to right on their skill bar, so take that into consideration as well. It's also possible for heroes to charm a pet. The best way to do this is to send your other heroes and henchmen away, out of aggro range. Then only you and your pet-seeking hero will approach the animal. Open the hero's skill bar by pressing the number next to their name and manually click on Charm Animal once you have that animal targeted. This way, the henchies or other heroes won't try to attack the animal during the charming process, which happened previously when charming with henchies. With the introduction of Nightfall, both skills and attributes are on the same panel now, and you can access that panel by pressing K. This panel can now be used to adjust the skills and attributes of not only you, but also your heroes. Before making these adjustments, you can select the character or hero you want on the top of the panel. Attributes are listed on the top half of the panel, along with a display of unspent attribute points. When you add a hero to your party for the first time, you may want to check to see how that hero's attribute points have been spent. Next to each attribute, there are arrows for increasing and decreasing the number of points spent on that attribute, just like with your own character. While you're in a town or outpost, you can increase or decrease the number of attribute points spent on each one. But outside of a town or outpost, you can increase attributes by allocating unspent attribute points, but you cannot decrease them. Heroes gain the extra 30 attribute points in two sets, just like the players can in those extra attribute point quests. What they do is they gain the first 15 when they reach level 10, and the rest they gain after they reach level 15. The bottom half of your skills and attributes panel shows the skills list. In previous campaigns, You chose skills for your character by dragging them from a skill list panel to the skill bar at the bottom of your screen. But in Nightfall, you choose skills by dragging them from the skill list to a small skill bar at the bottom of the skills and attributes panel. As in previous games, you can only alter your build of skills while you're in a town or outpost. Each hero begins play with a build of skills. It's important to note that heroes automatically have access to all skills that are unlocked on the player's account, including elite skills. Nightfall introduced a new feature that will allow players to announce their complete build by holding down Control and clicking anywhere on their skill bar. And this feature also works with heroes. Simply open the hero's skill bar and control click on any skill to announce to your other party members what your hero has in their build. This can really come in handy when you're using two of the same type of hero. On top of that, players may unlock skills for their heroes by using hero skill points at a hero skill trainer. Unlike normal skill trainers, these hero skill trainers charge no gold, only hero skill points. In turn, the skills unlocked here can only be used by heroes, not by the player himself. A drop-down menu near the top of the panel also allows you to change the secondary profession of that hero. When you choose a secondary profession for your hero, you may want to change that hero's build to include skills from the profession you've chosen. With the wonderful new Save Templates feature, you can now save your builds on your computer's hard drive to use with your other character's heroes as well. The template button is a blue floppy disk icon in the upper left-hand corner of the Skills and Attributes panel. After you click on it, you'll see three choices in a drop-down menu. There's Save to Template, Load from Template, and Manage Templates. With Save to Template, you can save a build of skills and attributes to your computer. Outside the game, you can decide whether and how you want to send these files from your computer to another computer. After you have a saved file, you can use Load from Template to upload a build from your computer to the game. With Manage Templates, you can rename, delete, and move files. Outside of a town or outpost, you can see more information about a hero in your party by using a hero control panel. You can also use it to change that hero's combat mode, as I previously mentioned. A button to the left of the hero's name in your party panel opens or closes a hero control panel. Click and drag on a panel to change its location on your screen. How much you use your hero control panels is entirely up to you. You don't need to open hero control panels every time you play the game. Instead, though, each panel gives you more information and control over a hero. Each hero control panel contains these elements. The upper left-hand corner of the panel shows the hero's name and picture. The upper middle of the panel shows the hero's health and energy. The upper right corner has icons for selecting from your three choices of combat modes, as I mentioned before, with the aggressive, defensive, and passive. The bottom of the panel shows a small skill bar for this character. You can see when the hero's skills are activated, and you can also watch to see how long they take to recharge, just as in your own skill bar. Your hero's AI determines when skills are used, but you can interrupt that routine by clicking on a skill on the hero's small skill bar. By clicking on a skill, you prioritize that skill. You'll see a green check mark over that skill on the small skill bar. The hero will not use any other skills until successfully using that skill. The hero will also attempt to use your target. Directly under the panel to the left, you can see the hero's morale boost, or death penalty, if there is one. Next to that icon, you'll see a list of conditions and hexes affecting that character. When you call a target, all of your aggressive heroes attack it. Defensive heroes attack it if they're in range. Passive heroes do not attack it at all. The same condition applies if you assist with other characters' attacks. After a character in your party calls out an attack, you can assist with that attack by clicking on the target symbol next to the character's name. And now onto the hero's inventory. The bottom half of the inventory panel shows your inventory items. Your character and all your heroes share that same inventory. There are not separate inventories for each hero. The top half of the inventory panel includes an inventory interface showing your character or a hero along with the weapon, armor, shield, or focus item that that character or hero is carrying. Some things to take note of regarding hero inventory are the fact that they can have runes and insignias applied to their armors, and since their armors cannot be removed, there is supposedly a 100% chance that you can salvage a rune from their armor once applied. Also, it's possible for your heroes to use customized weapons, as long as those weapons are customized to the character who uses those heroes. So, for example, if you have an axe that is customized to your warrior character, but you give it to your monk character to give to her warrior hero, that's not going to work. But your warrior character can give it to his warrior hero to use. You follow? In the retail version of the game, more than one player with a character in a party can control a copy of a hero. One character is the authentic version of that character, and the other one is called a duplicate. The duplicate uses a generic name instead of the hero's normal name. From the ones I've seen, the generic names are either something like Sunspear Warrior or Young Monk or something along those lines. So let's meet the heroes. This is an ongoing dispute as to exactly how many heroes there are in Nightfall, but most people can agree that there are at least 15 right now. There is some speculation that a certain infamous Prophecies NPC has made their way into the hero ranks, but from everything I've read, that seems to just be a joke. I think I wouldn't really count on that holding too much water. If you have any other info on any more heroes that might be in the game, please post something in the Guildcast forums. I have a whole topic set up just for the sake of debating what I talk about, so just go ahead and let us know. Okay, so like I said, there's 15 confirmed heroes so far. 14 of them are in the game now, and one is supposedly coming at a later time. You can get these heroes by completing certain PvE missions, or you can actually unlock them with Balthazar points in PvP. Some heroes are mandatory to the storyline, and some are completely optional. Likewise, there are those that may be mandatory, yet optional to choose between two of them. I'll list the heroes by name, profession, relevance, and Balthazar faction needed to unlock. I won't, however, list what quests you need to unlock each hero, because I really consider that a tiny bit of a spoiler, and it's more fun to find these things out for yourself sometimes. Okay, so first we have Koss. He's a warrior, he's mandatory, and you can get him with the cost of 3,000 Balthazar faction on your PvP character. Then we have Dunkaro, who's the monk. He's also mandatory and also costs 3,000 faction. We have Milani, who's a dervish, and she's also mandatory and costs 3,000 faction. Next we have Acolyte Jin, who's a ranger, and she's actually optional. She costs 3,000 Balthazar points also, and you can choose between her or Acolyte Susuki, who is an elementalist. Those two are optional in a certain quest, but you have to choose between which one you want to get. But they're not mandatory to the storyline at all. Then we have Talcora, who is a monk, and she's mandatory. She actually costs 6,000 Balthazar faction. Then we have Elias, who's a necromancer. He's optional, but you can only get him if you have prophecies on your account, and he costs 3,000 Balthazar faction. Then we have Zen Mei, who's the assassin, and she's optional as well, and you can only get her if you have factions on your account. And she also costs 3,000 Balthazar faction. Then we have Zed Shadowhoof, the elementalist centaur. He's mandatory to the storyline, and he costs 6,000 Balthazar points. Then we have Margaret the Sly, the ranger, who is also mandatory, but you have to, she's mandatory, but there's, in the quest where you get her, you have to pick between her and the Master of Whispers, who's a necromancer. And both of those come at a cost of 6,000 Balthazar through PvP. Next, we have Gorin the Warrior. He's a Hammer Warrior. He's optional. And you have to choose basically between him and Norgu, who is a Mesmer. Now, Gorin costs 6,000 Balthazar, and Norgu costs 3,000 Balthazar to unlock. And then we have General Morgan, who is a Paragon, and he is also mandatory to the storyline, and he costs 3,000 Balthazar. Now, those 14 I just named are confirmed, and you can get them in the game. Everybody who has beat the game knows this. But there's one left, and that is Raza. There's not really too much known about Raza. Gale Gray mentioned that he will be in an upcoming update, which a lot of people have been speculating is the Winter's Day update, in possibly an elite mission during that time. But this is all speculation, and the only thing that is a fact about this is that Raza has been named, and Gale Gray says that he will be available in an upcoming update. And it should also be taken into consideration that at the Throne of Secrets, at the end of the game, you can get quests to gain any hero that you previously chose not to get. When there were two of them and you had to choose one in a quest. I don't really consider that a spoiler, though, because it's not really giving any vital information away. It's like when people mention that you get a phoenix at the end of Nightfall.
Hey all, this is Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the street. I have a joke for you. Why can't you borrow money from a dwarf? Because they're always a little short. Get it? Get it? Dwarves are short. Anyway, I wanted to say thank you to everyone who wrote to me or whispered me wishing me luck on my marathon, and for all of the congratulations afterwards. Yes, I finished it. It was a long haul, but I finished it. And also special thanks to Brendan from FalconTwin.com. Your well wishes really made my day. I also got an email from a fellow whose character name is Johnny Argo, and he said that he has also been running, but he was having some difficulty with staying motivated. But he figured that if another Guild Wars fanatic could tear themselves away from the game for a little while, then so could he. So good for you, Johnny. And now, since I have just told a few thousand people here that you are a runner, consider that a little motivation for you. Now on to talking about Guild Wars. Jamonian Grenth asked to be mentioned, and if anyone else asked to be mentioned and I forgot about you, I'm sorry, I have notes everywhere and I don't remember where anything is anymore. So just send me an email or something and I'll try to remember you this time. Also, Cal Agrim gave me a nice present. He gave me some trade contracts, and thus enabled me to get my first diamond. Yay! So now I have no empty slots in my material storage anymore. As for other gems, I salvaged a sapphire this week out of some jeweled daggers. So yeah, I'm glad I expert salvage everything. Sapphires are my favorite. I have a bunch of sapphire and diamond jewelry because it's cool. Also, I'm sure that Sean will mention the details of the time and location again, but if you can make it to the Guildcast one-year anniversary party, I'm sure it will be a blast. It's also somebody's birthday that day. The 19th is Artful Dodger's birthday. Okay, so I've been getting numerous whispers in the past few weeks that all ask the same questions, and I haven't had a chance to answer every single person individually, so here are your answers. Yes, I have Nightfall. No, I have not finished it yet. Yes, I love the game. No, I am not going to write an essay on why Alona pwns Tyria, because I don't think it does. Now, last week, we had a nice little chat about how great Nightfall is. And not to say that it isn't or anything, because it is. I really like this game. But in that show, you got to hear the rare, happy, agreeable Sinea. Not feeling so agreeable this week. So I started listening to Guildcast episode 53 last week, right? And so I'm listening, and I hear the email about how there's not going to be any strategy guide released. And so livid was I at that point that I paused the show, stopped to go write a post on the forums about how mad I was about it, and then went back to listening to the show again. A lot of people think it's no big deal, because all you really need is GuildWiki, right? But I like having a guide. So what if the skill descriptions change a little bit over time? That is inevitable. For me, having a guide on hand is so valuable because you can just flip it open for reference. And most of the time, it's not even reference for me. It's when I'm trying to answer questions for other people. You don't have to stop playing and open up another window to find the answer. Even before Guildcast was around, people would ask me things like, where do you get such and such a skill? Or what's the bonus for this mission? And all I'd have to do is just grab my book and I would have the answer for them in about 30 seconds. I actually hardly ever use GuildWiki unless I need to look up something specific. Really, I never used any online resources at all when I was first going through the game, except for tips on Ascension. And even then, all I did was a Google search and usually just got hits on forums and read a few things there. I'm the kind of person who does like to read a bunch about the game that I'm playing, but I really hate staring at a computer screen and reading. I am at a computer all day at work, and if I'm gonna stare at a screen some more when I get home, I'd much rather be playing Guild Wars, not reading a document. If I'm going to read, I would much rather be able to lie down on the couch and read a book. I used the strategy guide a lot when I first started playing Guild Wars. I also bought the one for Chapter 2, and at first I felt kind of gypped when I bought the factions guide, because I thought, hey, why didn't they list all the quests that you can get these skills from? But then I realized, well, you know. But there was a lot of new content in factions, like what's a cooperative mission, what's a competitive mission, what's challenge mission. And also, if you're into it, there's a lot of lore in that guide, which is very interesting. Yeah, you can get most of this stuff online, but I really like having a book better. I bought Nightfall from EB because they give you a discount on the guide when you purchase the game from them. If I had known that there wasn't going to be a strategy guide, I would have bought it from a different store, because there was a local store that was giving out free t-shirts with copies of the game, and I didn't take advantage of that. I also might have bought the collector's edition, because, believe it or not, I use those fold-out maps all the time. Especially since you can't see the map anymore when you're standing in the guild hall or something, it's really nice to be able to open up a map and look at it. So I've had about a week to cool off about this, and fortunately I have a very good friend who is going to send me the map from his collector's edition so that I have one. I am still not happy about not having a guide, but I am less pissed off about it than I was before. But with Nightfall, there are so many new things that I know a lot of people could really use a strategy guide right about now, even if it's just to see what the next mission is. One would think that it should all be pretty linear and straightforward, but because of all the wide open spaces and such where you can just explore, I don't know how, but just yesterday I noticed that there was a mission I hadn't done yet. So I went and did it, and while I was doing it, I was like, what? Because in the cutscene, there was a boss there, alive, one that I had already killed in a previous mission. So I knew that I must have somehow done these missions out of sequence. I don't know how, because I thought the way the primary quests are set up is supposed to prevent that, but obviously it didn't. And then I have a guildie who did something, I don't know what, but he took some quest out of sequence, and then it wouldn't allow him to access the next vital primary quest. So it basically bugged, and he wasn't able to do the next mission. I'm not exactly sure how it happened, but he managed to resolve it by piggybacking on someone else who had the quest that he needed. And then it opened something up, and he was able to continue the storyline. And then there's another one where, after a certain point of the storyline, part of the terrain changes. And if you have an earlier quest that you didn't finish, like me, I leave quests open and then go back and do them at my leisure later. But in that quest, if it was in that zone, you can't get into it anymore because the terrain has changed. You have to basically just go find someone who hasn't reached that point of the storyline yet and you have to get them to ferry you into the zone, basically. So I think that's just not very good. Something is not right about the way this is set up. Okay, moving on. Let's talk about heroes. Sorry, but I have some more unhappy words about this subject too. I heard, and I don't know for sure because I have not played with it yet myself, but if you know the answer to this, go ahead and write me and tell me. But a guildie told me that once your hero charms a pet, your hero is stuck with it and can't trade it in and go charm a new pet later. There are a couple people I know who are not happy about that. So please write me an email and tell me if you know a way to get a tamer or something to take your hero's pet. And speaking of pets, where is the hippo? After all that hype in the scribe, I have to ask, where is the hippo? Seriously, I mean, it's not me that wants one, because my ranger is perfectly happy with her dune lizard, but Loudon really, really, really wants a hippo. It's like his favorite animal ever, and he's really upset that there's no hippo. So please, please, ArenaNet, bring back the hippo so that Loudon can go tame one and stop bothering me about it. Okay, ranting is over for now. Beware, because I'm sure this is not the last time you will hear it. Now, about heroes. I started playing the challenge missions where you get armor for them. What you do is you go into these challenge missions, and the armor doesn't actually drop on the ground, it just appears in your inventory as a green item when you get it. Then you take it to an NPC in that challenge mission town, and you select from that list which hero you want to apply the armor to. It doesn't change the stats or anything, it just makes the armor appear different, and some of them are really cool looking. I have about 5 of these armors so far, and I haven't decided if I want to use them on my heroes or sell them to somebody. I'll probably sell them because I need money for more signets of capture. Some people have trouble with controlling their heroes because the heroes will move away from where the flag is placed. I found that the heroes will do this more often if they are set on aggressive and if they're too close to the enemies. They will also leave their flag and try to go resurrect a nearby ally. You can either disable their res skill, or you can set the flag further away, and you can also set them on defensive, and that will help make them stay put more. If you want to level your heroes pretty fast, just take them with you when you go questing, and they'll gain more experience from it. If more than one person in your party has heroes, you have to make sure that all of you are coordinated. The heroes are going to follow whichever player owns them. One evening, I was skill capping with someone that I know, and let's just say that my heroes were sober and his were not. And I was calling targets and everything, but it was just a mess. But then afterwards, I took my heroes and I grabbed 4 henchies instead, and I went into that same zone and had no problem, because they were all coordinated and there was only one player, being me, controlling where they go. So it's like any party where you have multiple people, they have to know what everybody else is doing, but all I'm saying is that because of the way that the heroes are tied to individual players, you can't just treat them like henchmen the way we used to. You have to take into account who owns the hero. One of my favorite things about heroes is that you can take them with you anywhere. I played the Frostgate mission with a guildie who's kind of new to the game, and it was so nice to have level 20s instead of weaker henchmen. I was also playing with Mirage, who I think he brought his Paragon over to Tyria, and he was using his heroes there, and I thought that was fun. The possibilities that this opens up are great. The Titan quests are going to be so much easier. Normally you have to find a full party because the henchmen are too low of a level, but not so if you have heroes to flesh out your group. You can also map some areas easier if you're running around with level 20s to back you up. There is, for instance, a death trap outside of Beacon's Perch, which is swarming with high-level monsters to try to deter Drox runners. But that makes mapping and capping there hard, because you can't do it by yourself. You need people, because the henchies are too weak. There's a boss spawn point that's really easy to get to right outside of Beacons, but you used to have to snag a few friends to come help you out with it, because the henchies would just die instantly. Not anymore if you have heroes! So, yeah, I'm elated that you can take your heroes not everywhere, but almost anywhere. I'm sure there'll be plenty more to talk about heroes in the future, but for now, this has been Lady Sinea bringing you The Word on the Street.
If you're not already aware, there have been some changes to the PvP segment. Solera will no longer be doing this segment, but instead it will be taken over by me with the help of Lady Sinea whenever possible. Plus, I'll be enlisting the help of several PvP fanatic friends in-game who might not necessarily want to come on and record a segment, yet they are willing to throw some helpful information my way. When I do use info from these players, I will, of course, credit them as well. So the segment itself has not been eliminated from the show. Actually, quite the contrary. I hope to be able to turn the segment into one that both enlightens newer PvPers and also helps out the more veteran players in a larger way than it was before. So, regarding heroes in PvP, there's one major issue that comes to mind, and that's the new hero battles. I've played around with hero battles a little bit, and I gotta say I really enjoy them. It adds a whole new, kind of an RTS feel to the game. In fact, I like them so much that there are currently some contests and possibly even a tournament in the works centered around hero battles. Of course, I'll announce more about this later once I get some details worked out. So let's learn a little bit more about these hero battles. They're basically a one-on-one form of PvP combat where each player joins with three heroes which he can control. The first player who reaches a score of 20 wins. Points are earned both by holding the center control point, where you get 1 point or 20 Balthazar points per 30 seconds, as well as killing members of the enemy team, where you get 1 point or 20 Balthazar per kill. If neither team has reached 20 points when 10 minutes has elapsed, the team with the highest score wins. If teams are tied, then a sudden death is initiated, and the next team to score a point wins the match. The winning team then earns 5 times their points at the end of the battle. Well, how do we get to a hero battle? Well, first, what you do is you map travel to the Battle Isles, which would be the Great Temple of Balthazar, and you can do this from either Tyria or Cantha. And then to access the hero battles, you must unlock at least 3 heroes onto your account. If you haven't already unlocked the first 3 heroes, then you can just simply complete a Zacian basic training with a PvP character, and then you talk to the priest of Balthazar, who will give you the free unlocks. Once the heroes are unlocked in this way, you can map travel to the hero battle at any time. And take note that you must have Nightfall, or you cannot unlock any heroes, and you cannot participate in these battles. Each hero battle map consists of multiple control points. These control points are captured in the same way as control points in Alliance battle maps are, and they give the holder certain bonuses. There are several strategies that people have been swearing by in these hero battles. Some people say that making your ranger heroes as trappers seems to be quite popular for capping, and in much the same way as Vimoy does in HA. Also, simply making an Ellie or a ranger spike build for the death count alone can work wonders. You could do something like have 2 monks and split your party into 2 groups, just for the sake of capping for points. But in either scenario, whether you concentrate more on capping, or you concentrate more on pure death count, or even if you try both, it's a difficult form of micromanagement in itself. You have the versatility and the unexpected nature of a random arena battle, as well as the rage quitting sometimes. And you also have the ability to form your own party, as in team arenas, but on a more controlled field where you dictate how the other 3 members of your party act, which can be very valuable. So it's kind of like a mix between those. Right now, hero battles are still quite new, so most people are trying them out for the very first time. In that regard, you may come across some newer players who don't know what they're doing yet, which really makes this form of PvP an easy way to earn faction, if you do know what you're doing. Next week will be our one-year anniversary show, so I wanted to talk a little bit more about what we'll be doing then. First, there's the party that we'll be having that I mentioned on last week's episode. It'll be on Sunday, November 19th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in the Great Temple of Balthazar, International District 1. There will be plenty of ale to be given out, as well as prizes for some games that we'll be doing. Nothing too crazy, just some little fun Guildcast trivia games where we'll see how well you've been listening to me over the past year. And also some other fun stuff like drunk racing and possibly some others that I'll announce during the event. But nothing too competitive, mainly just for fun. And hopefully, depending on the turnout, at least everyone in attendance will receive some kind of item from me. And I'm going to use this as an opportunity to clear out some old prizes to make room for some new Nightfall skin prizes that are worth a little bit more. And I want to do this for the new season of Guildcast contests and tournaments. Now, I've been asked by several people if I could possibly change the date or the time of this party, considering 7 p.m. Eastern is midnight for the UK, and, they have to go to school or work the next day. Plus, you know, anyone else around the world in any given time zone, for that matter, like Australia or Belgium or Japan or, you know, anywhere else I have listeners. This is a pretty sensitive subject to me because you know that I wish every single one of you could be there. I really honestly do. I was going to even throw multiple parties for this to accommodate other people around the world, but then I realized it would really turn into something like, well, you know, that's not fair. You did one for the Brits, but not one early enough for the Aussies, you know? So you see what I mean. I'd end up doing 30 different parties for 30 different time zones, and that's just not possible. So I'm going to stick to one party. But despite this inevitable problem that may irk a few people, I hope we can just have fun at this party. And if you can't make it, I'll still love you anyway. I'm going to be taking some video at this party too, so for those of you who can't make it to the party itself, at least you'll still be able to watch the fun in a movie that I'll make later on. And hopefully we'll be able to have the new episode next week out just before the party starts. And that episode will be our anniversary show, where we'll answer some emails and we'll play some happy anniversary clips from those of you who sent some in. So if you haven't sent anything in yet, you have about a week left to do it. Also, don't forget about recording an intro for an upcoming show, like the ones that, you know, I've been playing in the last couple shows. I haven't really received a whole lot of these, so if you want me to play one of you, you still have a chance to have yours heard on an upcoming show very soon. And that's about it. I think that'll about wrap it up for this show. So until next week, be sure to tell your friends and tell your guildmates about guildcast.com.